Yes. There are more sources on Tu B'Shvat on that page that we did not do that really will explain to you how the relationship between Tu B'Shvat and Mat, but I don't want to get into that right now. I want to get back to Emet, but okay. For both sides, to continue our discussion of the search for truth. And we started to talk about the fact that human beings have the capacity to figure out the truth, but we also have the capacity to use the same intellectual powers that we have, to use the same magnificent brain that we're given, Baruch Hashem, to sort out the truth. We can also use to rationalize, we can also use to distort. And Davka, sometimes the more brilliant a person is, the more they're able to do that. And that it's not just that arriving at the right conclusion is not just a function of being smart enough to get there, and perhaps not even that much a function of that. It's much more a function of wanting to arrive at the truth, of wanting the right things. And therefore, this idea that Rav Chanan Wasserman talks about to some degree in Kovetz Ma'amarim, that's the second page here, which you can look at your leisure, you may have already looked at. But I want to move on to page 3 for a moment and just show you a couple of interesting things that are relevant to this. Yes, Bismcha. Here we go. So, everyone on page 3?
Yeah.
Page 3. Take a look for a moment. Sefer Mishle. Okay, Sefer Mishle. Commonly known as wisdom literature, right? Mishle deals with Chachma, and it's fascinating to look at how Mishle begins and ends, because here where Shlomo HaMelech is described as Chacham Mikol Adam, as the wisest, as the smartest, and the Sefer that he devotes to the issue of pursuit of Chachma, right? This is the Sefer that Shlomo HaMelech devotes to the pursuit of Chachma, as opposed to his other svarim, Shir Hashirim and Kohelet. This is the Sefer about Chachma. So we turn to Mishle, and I've mentioned this many times, I'll repeat it again, it's just such a useful tool and it's relevant here. If you want to get a handle on a particular Sefer or a particular section of a Sefer, it's always useful, or it's only worth a try, to look at the very beginning and the very end. Okay, because we all know, if a person gives a speech, they write an article, they write a book, what's going to leave the greatest impression on the reader or the listener, you know, the audience, whatever it is going to be the beginning and the end. Right? That's how it always is. And therefore, if you work backwards, it stands to reason that if someone who's intelligent is going to write a book or is going to write a whatever, is going to say a nevuah, whatever it is, the beginning and end are going to contain at least a good part of the essence of what's being said. Okay, so it's very helpful. You look at the beginning, you look at the end, you'll see. This works in so many places. Very, very helpful tool. So if you look at Mishle, you'll see something very interesting. Mishle, which is about Chachma, begins and ends with the idea, take a look, Pasuk Zayin, Perek Al, Pasuk Zayin, Yirat Adonai Reshit Da'at Chachma Musar Vilim Basu. Okay, Yirat Hashem Reshit Da'at. The beginning of Da'at is Yirat Hashem. You look at the end of Mishle, and we all know, famous Pasuk, Sheker Hachein Behevel Ayofi Isha Yirat Hashem Hititalah. There's a lot to discuss about what Shlomo's getting here, but one thing we see, Shlomo HaMelech makes the point that Da'at and Chachma is not just a function, not even primarily a function, of IQ, of knowledge, etc. There has to be a foundation of Yirat Hashem. Why? Because if a person is not looking for the right things, or a person is not directing their mind in the right direction, so it doesn't matter how brilliant they are. It's possible to do a very, very good job of rationalizing. And Chazal points out, in Kohelet Rabbah, essentially, the Amr of Yirmiyah Gadol Hayira Sheshnei Sfarim Shekatav Shlomo Lochatman Ela Biyira Hadav Duchti B'Sefer Mishle Sheker Achem Ve'Val Yofi, etc. V'Sifra Hadein Meaning Mishle, I'm sorry, in Kohelet rather, in this Sefer Kohelet, it says, Sof Devar Kol Neshmat Halukim Yira, meaning that this is a common theme in Shlomo HaMelech's writings, and we discussed elsewhere why that's so and why that's important in his own life, l'chule. I'm not going to belabor that now, but I just want to make the point that to paraphrase this idea slightly, if we want to be able to arrive at the truth, it takes a lot of self-discipline, it takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of self-motivation. It has to be a habit that we get into. It has to be something that's part of us, that we develop and cultivate a compass that directs us in that direction, that heads straight for truth. And that has to be something that's universal. It means whether we're talking about how we conduct our interpersonal relations, how we conduct our business affairs, how we, you know, deal with things when we go to a store, when we go to work, or whatever it is. And certainly when we're learning, and certainly when we're thinking about it, but in all areas of our life, it's all interconnected. The person, if it's part of who they are, that they, you know, say, I only want the truth, so it just creates a different orientation, and that's really what this is about. That's what this whole discussion is about. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. And even, and this is, I have to tell you, this much hurts me very, very much, that a lot of times in areas where Dafka, it should be, these should be the bastions of truth, and where there should be such a focus on Emet, in you know, so often, it's not the case. So often in areas of, you know, in places that are supposedly devoted to Torah and to learning Torah, it's not necessarily the case, and that's a very, very big problem. It's something that really needs to be corrected. And so many communities, it's not a value, and it's a big problem. It's a big problem. Let's take a look at the bottom of page 4 for a moment. Yes.
What's the definition of truth?
Oh, that's a nice, easy little question. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I'm saying that truth is something that has to you want to view things as they are, not as you'd like them to be, and that not as is convenient for you. That's, you know, kind of simple. But I'm saying that is something, not that it is Torah. I'm saying that is something that has to be applied to how we approach Torah, how we approach everything, right? Meaning that, you know, that whether it's in terms of, you know, when we go and we're selling our house, or when, you know, when we're going to talk to another person, whether it's a question of when we open up a sefer and try to understand what it's saying. Okay, let me give you an example or two to show you what I mean by the bottom of page 4 for just a moment. Very quickly, bottom of page 4, two sources that I think are so important, not in terms of what they're discussing, but in terms of the way they discuss it. Okay, let's take a look for a moment. The first is a tiny piece of a long tshuva by Reb Haigon. Reb Haigon was the last of the great Gaonim, considered by maybe one of the greatest of the Gaonim who ever lived. Okay, when he dies in 1038, it's considered the end of the period of the Gaonim. And you take a look on the right-hand bottom part of the page. This is from Otsar HaGaonim, which is a tremendous, tremendous sefer. It's a collection of material from the Gaonim in all various sources, from manuscripts, from collections of tshuva, to quotations in Rishonim. It's a tremendous, tremendous resource. And it's an incredible sefer. In Otsar HaGaonim on Chagiga, in the second perek, we have the following. Just a sentence of Rav Haigon. Again, remember, Rav Haigon, everyone can see Rav Haigon is the greatest of the great. Du'u ki anu me'odenu. It's unclear whether he's talking about Jews, whether he's talking about Chachamim, whether he's talking about himself in the plural, it's unclear. But whatever it is, he's certainly talking about himself at least. Du'u ki anu me'odenu. Ein darkenu l'chafot al davar l'faresh oto shelo midat mi sha'omro. K'derach sha'chayrim osim. Says Rav Haigon, it's never, ever been our practice. It's never been our practice to cover up things, to gloss over things and to explain them not according to the intent of the person who said it. It is an incredible, incredible line. And it's such a guiding principle in learning whatever you're learning, but I'll particularly talk about Talmud Torah, which is what we're engaged in this year, and as Hashem, throughout our lives. It's so important to understand. So I'll give you an example what I mean. Okay, I'll give you an example what I mean. Many years ago, I was in the Beis Medrash, I was sitting with my Chavrusa, and we were learning a Rambam. Okay? We were learning a Sugya, and we got up to a certain Rambam, and the Rambam seemed to say X. And I said, it's like really a strange thing to say, but the Rambam seems to be saying X. But that's what he seems to be saying. My Chavrusa said, no, but it can't be that he's saying that, because if he's saying that, then it's difficult, and you have a problem from this and that. It's just, it's very difficult to say that. So we must say that he's saying Y. But he's saying X, right? Okay. We go a little further, and I didn't accept that, right? I told him, no, he's saying, that's it. He's saying what he's saying, that's it. So we don't understand, so we have a problem, so we have a kasha. Good, we'll live with the kasha, we'll move on. Okay, so I don't know if he accepted what I said or not, but that was my position. We move forward, and over the course of learning more, I don't know exactly how long it took, and I can tell you, in general in my life, sometimes it takes a few hours, sometimes it takes a few minutes, sometimes it takes a few years, sometimes it takes 15 years or 20 years. But we go a little further, we discover that there's another Rambam, and when you look at that other Rambam, in light of what the Rambam said in the other one, we put the two together, everything makes perfect sense. But if you reinterpret the first one, then you never understand what anything said, right? It just doesn't work. And this is something that I found in learning all the time over the last many decades, and that is that there's a tendency to want to, you know, gloss over, patch up, make things, you know, simple or fit with our preconceived notions or whatever it is, and then you don't end up seeing what's really being said. That's a big problem. It's a big problem. It's very common. There are so many svarim that are like that. There are so many shurim that are like that. You have to be very careful with that. And we have to be careful with that in our own learning. He continues. And there's a second point here. He says, V'hare anu mefarshim l'cha dato shol tana zeh v'tochan kavanato v'mitat ma sh'aya savur v'ein anu arivim achshav shahar dvarim halacha. Says Rav Haigon, I'm going to explain to you the statement that you asked me about. I'm going to tell you what it really means. I'm going to tell you what the person who said it meant. I don't necessarily agree with what he says. I'm not necessarily accepting what he says, but I'll explain what he says, the way he meant it, and then I'll explain to you why I don't think it's true. You hear what Haigon is doing? He's saying, we have to understand what's being said. You want to disagree with it? You want to say that it's wrong? You want to explain, you know, you want to explain why. Yes, so-and-so says X, but I disagree. Call a kavod. But don't reinterpret what they're saying. Understand what they're saying. And then, if you want to disagree, disagree. This is not always the policy. It's not always the policy. I've known over the years, and especially when I was going back many years, I knew well a few people who still are, but at that time also were very involved in writing and editing, etc., things for Art Scroll. And I know, very clearly, there's not, no question, many cases where the policies were not like this at all. I'll give you an example. There was one particular discussion, I can tell you what it was about, it's not important, I don't want to go through the whole thing, but there's a machloket, listen carefully, between the Rashba and Rabbeinu Hanana. Okay? We're not talking about insignificant, they were both from, and they were both very important Rishonim. And thank you. So the Rashba and Rabbeinu Hanan disagree about the interpretation of a particular phenomenon in Tanakh and based on a particular Gemara. And so what happens? You have Rabbeinu Hanan, you have the Rashba, okay? And so listen to this one. So Art Scroll decided that only one of those two interpretations was firm enough. I'm not making this up. And so, and remember, what they're presenting is for people who are not going to learn the Rashba and the Rabbeinu Hanan on the original. They're only getting what they're being told from Art Scroll. So they presented one of the two opinions. The other one, Again, it wasn't a question of, well, we can't, you know, it's not an encyclopedia, we're not going to give you everything, we're giving you, you know, like, highlights, whatever. No, it was a deliberate decision. This is not a firm enough position, so take this one and not that one. It's an amazing thing. That's, you know, I only mention that, why I mention that, because I want you to understand what's special about what Rav Haigon is saying here. Okay, because that's not what's always done. It's not done in a lot. We have, bear with me for a second, I'm sorry, we have, and forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but it's just, well, it's about this. Anyhow, there's the other few months ago, maybe last year, I got the Sefer. They reprinted the Sefer by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Okay, everyone's heard of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach?
Yes, sir.
Okay. They reprinted the Sefer by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach on Shvi'it.
Art school?
Not art school. No, I'm sorry. I meant people reprinted it. Okay. I was very excited because it was out of print. It was important Sefer on Shvi'it. And, you know, as you're being Shvi'it there, I find out only a little shortly afterwards that it was a censored version. They had taken out the parts that weren't firm enough. Okay, parts that where he quoted Rav Kook in favorable terms or said things in defense of Het Mechiran, it was just taken out because it's not from Rav. Okay. I have no words to express, right? But that's what I mean, that there are people who are reprinting a Sefer, but with an agenda and with the sin for other people that, you know, this is kosher, this is not kosher. Not like, here's Sefer, okay. You want to write footnotes and explain why you think he's wrong about what he says about Het Mechira, why you think that this, that, or the other, Beseder. But rewriting history and rewriting Torah, and this goes on all the time. Yes?
There must be exceptions, and you don't tell children the full truth because, like, when you're learning, there's also, like, you find out more as you grow up. So,
I understand what you're saying, but I don't think it's at all comparable. It's all comparable. I don't think that the people who are making these decisions have the right to decide, you know, for a class or what they should know or not know about, you know, what Rishonim and Achronim and, you know, people far greater than themselves have to say. And it's, you know, and we're not talking about what you're presenting to you know, 6-year-olds or 10-year-olds. Talking about the fact that a person who's buying response on Orbach Sefer on Shvi'it is capable of reading it inside, and you want to present both sides.
But their case is probably that people are going to think, people are going to get turned away from what they're reading, which is the truth. They're kind of like directing people by not showing the full truth. You're directing people in a certain way without letting them decide.
Okay. It is certainly a problem. There's certainly a problem taking Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Sefer and censoring parts and deciding what parts are, like, and who are these people who are doing this? Who are they compared to Rav Shlomo Zalman? What chutzpah? Aside from the lack of any type of, you know, intellectual honesty and commitment to truth. But I'm saying, but that's, there has to be a commitment to truth. There has to be. Yeah, sorry, Sophie.
I mean, just trying to, like, follow up on Julia, like, trying to see, like, where they're coming from. Like, I mean, if I did that, I would say, like, I'm doing you guys a favor. Like,
you're not
asking, like, no, but, like, it's like the whole, like,
I'm helping. I think that that's a rationalization.
Mm-hmm.
I think that absolutely, that's exactly the point, that there is a tremendous capacity that human beings have to rationalize and to convince themselves that they're being tzaddikim when they're doing something that's a mashal act of rishus. That's mm-hmm. true.
That's not that.
That's no question. If you ask these people, they think that they are, believe me, they think that they're much holier than us, than anyone else. For sure. They think they're the biggest tzaddikim, after all. But, okay. I'm saying I tend to disagree with them, yeah.
Just on a point that Juliet said about teaching little, like, younger kids, is there an aspect of that of like the fact of as an emet when you teach younger kids.
But die that you have to teach in a way that's age appropriate, and it's a progression. You don't teach.
Like
they can't teach
like
everything.
You can't teach that way.
Like, but on the other hand, when the kid finds out about it, the kid, like, I'm talking from personal experience. One time, a teacher censored a Gemara for me. I went to art school to look at the Gemara. I realized, hang on, this is not what the teacher said. I went to the teacher asking. I was testing the teacher. The teacher was something Gemara about the fate of the guy who ran out of prostitutes and stepped in the mountains and died. Mm-hmm. The teacher didn't tell us the fate, just said, like, he's a really bad thing. I was like, and I asked the teacher alone, knowing what the fate was. Was the issue, like, it's a bad thing. What's the fate? The teacher would not tell me. She was not being fully intellectual honest with me. And I was like, full respect for that teacher.
No, but I
so,
just think
yeah, when, look, again, there are pedagogical issues. Look, there are pedagogical issues in terms of, you know, how appropriate to train. Look, what I'm saying is, I agree, I would not censor, you know, would not censor Gemara, and like, you know, I think that's inappropriate. But what is that certainly that we learn things on a simplistic level and then more sophisticated as we go on, that is part of the process of learning. But in other words, that's true that we do, you know, certainly that there's a progression in terms of and what how sophisticated and how detailed way you and how, you know, deep way you present things. But that's very different than censoring. And I think that there, you know, that again, are there gray areas? There are probably gray areas. Do you have to think about how you're presenting things? Of course. But I think that there are many things that clearly go beyond and are just a question of being a self-serving agenda and where it's just a question of rationalizing. Yes.
Understand that when learning you should be presented like the full case. But what about in a practical sense, like with your friends? Like, do you always have to give the truth?
There are circumstances where it's Mishan with Nedar Keshalom, there are cases where certainly where you do not, you know, you're not, we have to be tactful because there are other values like shalom that supersede. That's true. I'm not saying that emet is the only value. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but it's an important value that has to be cultivated and has to be a very important part. And even when we're mishanim pnei darkei shalom, it has to be done in a careful way and how, you know, and try as much as possible to maintain, you know. But again, that's a whole other topic. And again, yeah.
They consider
helping Kali's role at all?
Like, do they think that, like, oh, they're smarter than
Rosh Hashanah
or
whatever?
Like, they think they know him better than he knew himself. They think they know what he didn't want to
improve
himself.
Like,
I just, how is that?
I agree with you. What can I say?
I can agree.
Okay.
Like, they're narrowing his own, like, he's the tzaddik. He's the one who wrote the book.
Right, and he was writing the book for a larger audience, and then they feel for the audience that they're going to, that they want to read, and they want to show them the things
book.
They don't
know.
Right,
but they have.
Okay, so you have a point, but I'm just saying, like,
if they
have a sabra also, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it. They obviously have a rationalization for what they're doing.
Okay.
Well,
that's
the problem.
Yes, yeah,
but agendas aren't necessarily wrong as long as you admit that you have an agenda. So as long as the editors of the Shulchan Aruch and Arbach Sefer write,
this is edited.
We omitted certain portions that we believe are irrelevant. Why is that wrong?
Yeah, first of all, they didn't do that.
That's wrong. But you have
but,
to write.
You know, but
so in that case, but if it's for example, if I would take a Sefer and it was and I was giving it for a very defined audience. Why is that wrong to say
we edit our sources that we get in school. Like teachers will cut, like even like here, like teachers will leave parts of a source out, not necessarily because they're trying to hide something from us, just because it's not necessarily in their mind relevant, but maybe
it
would be relevant to us.
Right. So the point is that the difference is I'll explain to you. The point is that certainly, if the idea is that you're presenting an anthology on a topic, right, which is a comparable thing, so I'm saying, I'm going to give you an anthology of sources on X and on the topic of, you know, I don't know, whatever the topic is, and I bring down the things that are relevant, leave out things that are irrelevant. Of course, that's not censorship. There's nothing. That's not the same as reprinting a sefer. Right, and saying this is a sefer, I'm reprinting it, you know, and presenting it as if all you're doing is, you know, making nicer print and breaking up the paragraphs over it, and then just like happening to leave out all those things that don't agree with your hashkafa. That's a very different thing. And that's indeed what was done. And there are numerous examples. This is one example that, you know. Okay, I want to just give you one other example. The Radvaz. Radvaz, one of the great achronim, one of the great early achronim. He was an elder gadol at the time of Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo was still... Rav Yosef Karo... remember the great controversy over Hitchadshut HaSmicha, right, about reinstituting the smicha, the real smicha. So one of the machlok between Mari Beirav and the Maralbach, so Rav Yosef Karo was one of the talmim of Mari Beirav, and he was one of the people who was given smicha. And there's a big machlok between the Chachmei Tzfat, Chachmei Yerushalayim, and the whole thing. So one of the people who they asked about this question to decide was the Radvaz. In any case, Radvaz wrote thousands of important tshuvot, very, very, as well as a parish on the Rambam, that's Princeton Standard Rambams on many of the Svarim of the Rambam, very, very important. Achron, he writes in one of his tshuvot, fascinating, listen to what he says. He quotes a section from the Me'iri. Okay, the Me'iri falls in the footsteps of the Rambam and was a big rationalist. The Me'iri didn't believe in Shadim or Mazikim in the literal sense. He didn't think there were really like these demons running around, as is true of a number of Rishonim, most prominently the Rambam. And the Radvaz, listen to what the Radvaz writes. He quotes the Me'iri, okay, he says what the Me'iri says, and for whatever reason he quotes the Me'iri, and he says, V'lo tashadein mipnesha katavti lashona Me'iri shani machish mitziyot hashedim. The Radvaz. Listen to what the Radvaz does. You know what the Radvaz does? It's so beautiful. The Radvaz says, I'm convinced based on the Psukim, I'm convinced based on the Gemaras, that X is true, meaning that they're literally shade, and that's what I think. But he doesn't deny that the Me'iri says what he does. He says, the Me'iri says, I'll explain to you why I disagree with him. Okay, and that's an approach that is typical of Chachamim throughout generations, and unfortunately is not necessarily always what's practiced nowadays. I think that that's something to at least be aware of. Okay, we are going to stop at this point. There is a little more to discuss. On this topic, we'll have to see whether we're going to wrap it up or not, or whether we'll move on to the next topic. We'll have to see. I have to give that a little bit of thought. Bezer Hashem, next time, decide whether or not I want to censor the rest of this booklet or not. In any case, have a good day. Shavua Tov, we will continue Bezer Hashem next time.